Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good morning. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So this is live call-in radio. Phone lines are open. All the car guys have been flushed out of the system. And if you want to talk about your portfolio, the stock market, the economy, we're open for the discussion. All you have to do is punch in some numbers on your phone. 888-312-5757. 888-312-5757. You'll end up on the call board. We will know you're there, and we will get to you as quickly as we can without disrupting our train of thought.
Indeed, which is not hard to do, yeah.
which I was going to say, which might be hard to recover. So we want to stay with it. One of the things that has really changed the market, and what in our announcement said, well, the market creates a lot of confusing information. It certainly did this week, and Mr. Market is back in his schizophrenic frame of mind, not quite sure what to do after Fed Chair Jerome Powell issues some real whoppers this week in his congressional testimony. Some of these were, I think you could call them actually egregious. They certainly were revealing. For one, he said that the Fed should look at current higher inflation as temporary. They've been using the word transitory, unless it persists year after year. Ah. And yeah, so, you know, what are you looking at for your benchmark? I got a couple of what I call whoppers that he's not looking at. Inflation, he means year after year, prices go up. Well, yeah, that's kind of what we think of inflation. It's more expensive this year than last year and the year before and the year before. What was really surprising, he said, you almost need to be sitting down for this. Housing is an asset. We know that. Price rises in housing are not inflationary. Well,
yeah,
then
go figure that out. Yeah.
Why do they include the rent equivalent for housing in their inflation calculations? Now, we know why they put that in there, because housing prices a couple of decades back were rising so fast that made CPI look really bad. And so they took it out and said, well, you know, instead of using prices, we'll make an index. What would it be if you rented the house that you live in? What would that cost? That number looks better, so we'll adjust the CPI calculation. But to say they're not inflationary denies what they do in keeping track of inflation.
Right.
Now, on the used car, we talked about used car prices. They've just, you know, they have skyrocketed. They're up 25% from a year ago, 10% last month, but year over year, about 25%. And that probably is not going to last once the...
persist. Yeah, that'll even out.
Once the car companies can actually get enough people back at work to produce all the cars that need to be done, well, and then it's also the semiconductor shortage that's limiting production. Then the new car inventory increases, used car prices are probably going to settle down. So he says that we should look at that as inflationary. But looking at inflation just on a year-over-year basis is a little confusing, because I looked at some basic indices. Commodity prices over the last 5 years are up sevenfold. Well, that's not inflationary.
apparently, that has to be. That's the input cost to, you know, everything that we use. And 5 years is already at 5 years. You're thinking, well, that's not transitory. That's at 5 years in, we've got inflation. So it is baffling that they're still saying, well, we think this is going to go away. Maybe
industrial metals. Well, you know, it's copper and steel. and you're looking at the e-vehicle stuff, then you get into the rare metals. But industrial metals over the last 5 years have doubled. Lumber has good news over the past year because it has fallen, I think, about 57%, almost 60% from its high. And so relief is on the way. No inflation there until you look back 5 years. And I just did that before we opened up on the air here. Over the past 5 years, in spite of the recent decline, lumber, random length lumber, is still up 57%. That's not inflationary. And housing, which uses a lot of lumber, is up 60%. But we don't count housing because it's an asset. That can't be inflationary. The people pay more for housing. So the recent news on inflation is it's up 5, and it's transitory. Well, wages in the same time period are only up 3.6. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is a problem. People have to figure out how on earth they're going to stay up with inflation or they have a reduced standard of living. If you don't get wage increases, which are coming in order to hire people, and we've covered this in prior shows, in order to hire people, businesses are bribing them. Here's money just to fill out an application.
Please come see us. And it's starting to get better, but there's still a big shortage of people willing to go back to work right now.
48% of businesses are planning on raising prices, and there's no indication that consumers are complaining. They are buying anyway. This is a 40-year high, but it's not inflationary. But when in the Q&A sessions in Congress, Chairman Powell basically said, quote, "Even if inflation persists, I expect the Fed will not act quickly. We're just going to let it run and pray we're right." You know, it's no wonder Mr. Market is confused about what's going on. Should we be in growth stocks, tech stocks, value stocks, dividend stocks? Should we be in bonds? Where do I go? Where? Which turn in which fork in the road is the right one? Clearly, Mr. Market has been confused lately. And on top of that, the Fed may be right. If Congress actually figures out how the Democrats by themselves can pass a $3+ trillion spending bill, that is deflationary. That kind of spending on top of what we've already done to survive last year is a substantial drag on economic growth. And so if that's the case, and the Fed sits back and just watches, Mr. Powell may be right.
It's true, but like we always say, it's really bad policy to ever adjust your investment portfolio based on what might happen in politics. It's hard to tell whatever gets done anyway. And then if things do get done, you never know what the effect's going to be until after the fact. So trying to jump ahead based on a political point of view is very dangerous as far as your economic decisions go.
Well, for Mr. Powell, he's up for renomination here in the next couple of months, and so his testimony was critical to keep his job.
They have been saying they think he's coming back. They don't think they want to interject another level of uncertainty with a new Fed chairman. So he's got a pretty good shot of coming back this time anyway. And so we'll, but again, that's on the political side. So there's all bets are always off. You never know where that's heading. But he's probably coming back.
You have questions today, you want to call us. It's live call-in radio here on the Investor Resources radio program. 888-312-5757, 888-312-5757. If you don't receive our weekly email on Mondays, most days, week in review, send us an email, help@iriradio.com. help@iriradio.com. Week in review in the subject line, first and last name in the body of the email, and you will be one of the nearly 1,000 recipients on that email distribution. Well, I won't say most. That would imply a majority, but a massive number of those people actually open it up and apparently read it.
They do. Yeah, it's good. It's good stuff, and it's a nice little take on what's gone on the previous week and what things are important and what things you can probably safely ignore.
If you're a baby boomer or close to it, one of the things that you know is you invest in mutual funds or have in the past, maybe not now, but you certainly have in the past. For our careers in the industry, mutual funds were the way you diversified and you asset allocated and you watch money managers sometimes come and go and try to figure out how to reduce the fees, because many mutual funds were really quite expensive.
They were really steep, especially compared to today's fee structure, which is much lower.
Well, and it has been under price pressure for almost 30 years when the first exchange-traded fund came out, which was an S&P 500 index fund. And the financial advisor community said, yeah, mutual funds are easier. Not so much anymore. Wall Street is waving the white flag. They have surrendered, and they have given up the march to the mutual fund mantra. They are dancing to a new drummer, and it's $500 billion moving into exchange-traded funds, record numbers in recent years.
And that's a huge shift for Wall Street. The like you said, Don, the mutual fund, that was the gold standard of most individual investors. That's where you, like you said, you could buy diversification right off the bat. And for the fund companies, they were a bonanza because they were a channel that they could charge people on. And a lot of the charges people didn't see. And so it was almost like free money pouring in. And they were just loath to give those mutual funds up. Exchange traded funds came on the scene and they were very transparent. You always know what's in them. They're much, much less expensive. And the mutual fund companies were just panicked. And eventually they all had to start building exchange traded funds also, but they kept that mutual fund channel open because there was so much cash, so much income there. And now they just have to give it up and move on into ETFs. Everyone knows the secret's out far and wide that ETFs are so much more efficient.
Well, they're more tax efficient. They're certainly more transparent. I mean, with mutual funds, you only know what they actually own four times a year. Between the quarterly reports, which are 60 days late in your hands, they are open trading vehicles for the manager. Now, they usually have minimums that they must maintain. That's why you always lose money in a bear market in an equity mutual fund, is because they can't go to cash. When you buy one, and the financial advisor says, no, this is managed, and during bear markets, it's done really well. Which means in a bear market, the market's down 50 and you're only down 45. That's considered successful money management for mutual funds. That's actually successful money management for anybody using modern portfolio theory, or as I think it should be called, Studebaker portfolio process.
Studebaker portfolio. There you go. It's modern, except it was written in 1952. So it's time has come, and our time has come for our first break. Time to get out of here. Give everybody a little break here. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have our monthly market update for August already on the calendar. It's August 7th, Saturday at 9:15, right after the show here again. So if you'd like to register for that, just go to iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. Head to the webinar page and click that registration link. You're going to get an email back. There's a link in there, and on August 7th, you just click that link, and you will be live online with us. You'll be able to see the charts we're talking about and get a little clarity in your investment life there. It's a great time to also get a second opinion on anything that's in your portfolio that you're worried about or something you're thinking about adding. You know, it's a good time to get a second opinion on that. So just head to iriradio.com. registration page on the webinar page, and give it a click, get registered. It's well worth your time. If you would like to speak with us this morning, we're ready to talk about the economy, the markets, individual securities, anything economic. 888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757. Stay with us. We will be right back.
I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden along with the sunshine.
Yeah, a lot of the promo in the investment business is that investing in the market is just buy and hold. It's easy. I mean, you just buy stuff and you hang on, and the market always goes up. So, you know, go home and go to sleep. Don't worry about it. The problem is there can be long periods of time where the market does not go up and, in fact, goes down over long periods of time. Well, long is relative. Normally, a bear market doesn't last more than 2.5 or 3 years. And yet up periods of the market can last quite a bit longer than that. But that's another subject. We do have Gene from North Carolina on the line. Welcome, Gene. We haven't heard from you in a while, so welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks for taking my call, Don and Perry. You were just talking in the last segment about how the mutual fund industry kind of waved the white flag and I'm moving into ETFs. It seems to me that mutual funds still have a stranglehold on being monopolizing 401k plans. Have you seen any inroads into ETFs being offered in 401ks?
The answer is yes, there are, and you are right. They do have a stranglehold on it, and there are some places where mutual funds actually serve a legitimate purpose, particularly in 401k plans. The qualified default investment alternative are target date funds, which were really introduced broadly right after the 2008-2009 market tank, where people were absolutely afraid to be in the market, didn't know what to do. And the target date fund was, don't worry about it, we'll do the asset allocation. Just 65 years out from your birth date, pick that the fund that's closest to your retirement date. There's some inherent problems with it, which not our discussion today because it can take up a whole segment. There are some other areas where mutual funds still have, a legitimate purpose, and that's for beginning investors who are going to dollar cost average. It's easy to dollar cost average into a mutual fund, and there are a lot of very inexpensive index funds, which gives people broad market exposure instead of trying to figure out sector rotation. Let the fund do that until you get a little more money and you're actually going to pay some attention or have enough money to hire somebody to do that for you. But yes, inside the 401k, there is a move as a fiduciary response to reducing expenses. We just acquired a new 401k plan in the last couple of months, and the mutual funds in there were hugely expensive. Mm-hmm. And in fact, there were annuities, variable annuities in there, which are grossly overpriced, but nobody sees the cost. And you have a tax shelter inside a tax shelter, and you're paying the insurance company extra money because they are a tax shelter. Those kinds of financial advisor abuse to the plan participants are not justified and should come with repercussions, but nobody wants to bother with suing the financial advice. It's a hassle. But so the transition is to ETFs, and that, while we offer some mutual funds in our plan menu, most of it are inexpensive exchange traded funds. And we have found at times that some very inexpensively priced index funds can actually outperform some ETFs in the shorter term. Longer term, we don't know that yet.
Yeah, in terms of ETFs, they can also have target date ETFs, I imagine. And also, I think, would it be true that investors or participants in 401ks can encourage such changes to having ETFs being offered if they kind of launch class action lawsuits as they've done in the past in terms of trying to lower even the mutual fund fees and trying to get employers to lower their costs by changing to ETFs?
Well, I think it's, unless you're a very big firm, it would be very difficult for employees to put together a class action lawsuit that they're willing to pay the expenses for suing their employer, who is also typically the sponsoring fiduciary plan sponsor.
Although it did just happen at Boeing a few years ago. Boeing had to pay a lot of
money. Right, I remember several big employers.
Yeah, because they were overcharging.
I think the irony was that some of the employers were actual, you know, financial institutions.
Sure.
They were not. Some of the fund sponsors were not acting in a fiduciary manner. They were used to saying, we're a mutual fund sponsor and we're a big name, so don't worry about it.
We can charge whatever we want. Yeah, and that's what they were doing. And it turns out that's not the case. But you're right, Gene. Someone has to speak up. So the employees have to make some noise.
So that's a violation of ERISA, Employee Retirement Income Security Act of 74, and the fiduciary standard.
Yeah.
Well, that is changing.
Guys. Yeah. Thanks, Gene. Thanks for calling. Good to hear from you. You betcha.
So when we take a look at the stock market, well, let me just put the phone number in here again. If you want to talk to us, because Gene's gone, the phone line is open. That is 888-312-5757, 888-312-5757. If you want to talk to us during the week, we have a different phone number. It's our office number. That's 800-317-9119. Or go to our website. The shortcut is iriradio.com, where there's a world of information.
Lots of good stuff there, sure.
In the first segment, we talked about Mr. Market being schizophrenic once again. Well, you know, the theory with buying the S&P 500 index is that you own 500 stocks most of the time, sometimes a little less, sometimes
pretty,
a little
pretty
more.
Pretty close, yeah.
It's a round number, 500. Sounds better than 496. But while you may be diversified, the only thing that's working at the present time are five stocks. And if you don't own those five stocks, basically the market's not going anywhere. It has been quite weak. And we have, with earnings season underway, and the major banks, who are also the major brokerage firms, they're investment banks, have instructions from particularly these five major companies to buy back their stock like they were in 2019. Buy back the stock raises the price. Now, it's actually good for the investors who own it because there's fewer shares outstanding. So corporate profits are divided among fewer people. Earnings look better. CEO compensation's also better when the stock price goes up. No conflict here. But those buyback activities on a handful of stocks make the market look healthy and risk-free. Not reality. So there have been... Well, if we go back to some of the highs in the market, typically you get around 75 to 80%. You get above 80% of stocks above their 50-day average, and you probably should be expecting some pullbacks and consolidation.
It's a little high at that point, and everybody gets a little nervous when it gets that top heavy with everybody making money, right?
But now we're looking at less than 50% of the stocks are above their 50-day high.
Which is so odd, especially on the S&P, consistently hitting record highs these days, and less than half of the stocks are above their 50-day moving average, which says they're at best just kind of moving sideways. And so that's a very strange occurrence for that much concentration to be in just a handful of stocks moving the entire index higher.
So you turn around and look at some of the other signs that would generate caution, and you begin to scratch your head. Is this the top? Maybe, maybe not. Actually, there's enough money. In fact, JP Morgan says there's enough money sitting on the sidelines. Not all of it's going to be spent on consumption. A good portion is going to be spent on building money for retirement, and that means more money flowing into stocks. The question is, how much of that money's coming in from Robinhood investors and how much of it's coming in from boomers who are much more conservative and much more serious about whether or not their account is going to have a significant drop. Short-term pullback, that's not a big deal. But another drop like last year, 34% in the S&P, or we go back to 08, 09, 54% in the S&P, and 7 years to get even. When you're close to retirement, that's a serious problem.
It's serious enough that that's when people leave the market. They throw their hands up and say, okay, the market's rigged. This is not something I can participate in. And they go home. And that's just as bad, because now you're going to miss the opportunity to get the growth you're going to need to hit your investment goals, whatever they are. If you just don't participate at all, then you're just you've checked out, and you're going to get no return, and that's dangerous. Also, you can't do that. You can't go home. You have to find a way to engage with the market, and we think we've done that. We think with our relative strength approach, when we're looking at the market all the time, you can find where the strength is, you can identify the weakness, and stay with the strength. It doesn't guarantee anything, but it increases your odds of being profitable, and that's the main thing. That's what we're all doing here.
It avoids the big losses.
That's the key.
That's really the key. Rotation. Don't lose money.
That's the one that blows a hole in your portfolio and it takes years to come back from. And it also puts enough fear in everyone that they just stay away. And we routinely see that investors that have been in cash for 5 years, 10 years, and they can't talk themselves into getting back in the market because of what just happened to them. They discover that pie chart has no protection in a down market, and everything goes down together, and they just walk away and stay away until the market's been up for years and years, and they finally, fear of missing out gets so bad that they have to make a move, and that's when they come back and hopefully talk to us, and we can show them that you can safely do that. Time for our bottom of the hour break here. Let's get out of here. Take a brief pause. I'd like to remind everyone once again, we have our August market update coming up Saturday, August 7th, 9:15, right after the show. You can register for that at irradio.com. That is irradio.com. If you'd like to call us this morning, give us a call at 888-312-5757. That is 888-312-5757. You are listening to Investor Resources here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Well, there is some good news, apparently, that is on the way, according to Jamie Dimon, who is at the top of the food chain at J.P. Morgan.
Indeed he is, yes.
He recently had his earnings call, and he pointed out that in their opinion at J.P. Morgan, that investors are primed to pump the economy and the market. House values are up, stock values up, income's up, savings are up. And confidence is up.
That's one of the things that someone that's involved with personal banking gets to see. So they are sure that we are ready to go. And now that the economy is opening up, the consumer is going to come out of their shell and do a little recovery shopping, having been shut out for 18 months. And Jamie Dimon says, get ready. It's coming.
So now you think, what does J.P. Morgan have to do with my credit card? Well, they have a lot to do with a lot of people's credit cards because they own Chase Bank. It doesn't come out with J.P. Morgan on it, but they're the owners. And he reported that debit and credit card balances are up 45%, or spending. I don't know
spending,
if it's balances,
correct.
But the spending is up 45% from a year ago and up 22% from 2 years ago in 2019. That's a more important number.
That's very important, yeah.
Coming up from last year in the depths of the pandemic, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Home loans up 64% year over year. Auto loans up 61%. If you want a car and haven't been able to buy one, people are just paying up. And that's not inflationary, according to the Fed. But anyway, spending and borrowing. Consumers have a lot of money left that they can still do. Home equity is up. A lot of people are refinancing and tapping into that. If you're on the radio, you may hear refinancing mortgage solicitations all the time. Credit card balances are actually lower because people have been paying down debt. That means there's dry powder ready to be spent.
People were socking away a good chunk of that stimulus money. Instead of spending it, they were getting themselves into better economic shape. And now that it looks like I say, the economy is opening up again, that's why they're saying, hey, you know what? this looks like we're going to have a consumer spending boom coming here. And it's already showing up, and Jamie Dimon thinks it'd be bigger than it is right now, except for some of the supply constraints that we're having coming out of the pandemic, getting the economy restarted across the board. There's some imbalances there, and that's causing a lot of the price increases right now. That's driving a lot of the inflation. We just get to wait and see how much of that's going to balance itself out and how much is going to hang around. And nobody knows that yet.
We don't. And there's really a lot of conflicting information with companies like Walmart and Target. The supply chain issues, while they've caused delays, haven't caused a lot of rising price problems because they've contracted for their deliveries over long periods of time. But on a smaller producer, and I'm thinking of problems in Brazil with coffee producers and orange producers, they don't necessarily have long-term contracts. So
right.
Shippers have just said, even if they contracted last year, it's just a one-year contract, they've said, yeah, we're going to cancel it. Prices are 4 or 5 times higher, and if you want to ship, you're going to have to pay more. Or we're just not showing up. We're going to go other places where we can get the money.
And they will. They'll get it. Somebody else will pay the spot price, whatever it happens to be, and they will move that product, but the price is going up.
So one of the facts of the market is that, this is kind of a financial advisor mantra, the market tends to go up over time. Yes, it does. But that's not a lie. But it can also destroy your plans for retirement and an awful lot of other stuff. Because while you take a look at the number of bull markets since 1928, I had to count here, there are 23 of them. But when you look at corrections and bear markets, there's 53 of those.
Uh-huh.
Statistically, the pie chart model, or my Studebaker portfolio process from 1952, calculates there's only one bear market in 500 years, and that's all the plan is concerned about. But 53 and 1, that's a divergence.
That's not quite the same.
So it shows the
difference.
All that long.
Yeah, it's the difference between academia and reality. I mean, in academics, statistically, they can look at that and make the calculation and say, well, that'll come around about once every 500 years. In reality, when you get to live through it, much more often than that.
Yes, yeah, so the average downturn. Averages are not a way to make a plan.
True.
They only last a little over 200 days, and bull markets last a little over 1,100 days. So that's in your favor. It's just that the market doesn't work on averages. Your plan is probably built on long-term averages, which for stocks means you're assuming you're going to earn somewhere in the 9 range, 8 to 10%. The problem is, over the last 20 years, the average is just over 6. You're assuming you're going to make a 50% better return than reality. Now, you haven't been investing since 1928.
That's a safe bet, yeah.
I don't think I've never met anybody. I met one individual was close, but he's not alive anymore. The reality is, you're investing in today's market, and those long-term averages are academically attractive, but that's not the world you live in, trying to build, much less protect, which is should be a much higher priority. How do you protect your portfolio without giving up the return potential?
That's so important, and it's like you said, Don, it's so important to remember that no one gets that long-term average. No one invested all of their money 60 years ago and then didn't use it until today. That's what it requires to get that long-term average. So it's really a myth anyway. No one gets that long-term average, and it's much more important to look in the near term and say, I've made a lot of money because I've saved a lot of money, and I don't want to give that all up in a big market downturn. That's the key. You can't take that big hit. And if you're in that pie chart portfolio, there's no protection there. Everything moves down together in a big market decline, and you're going to lose money, period. And it's just there's just not enough safety there to make it worthwhile. Makes it a lot easier for the firm that handed you the pie chart. They don't have to do anything. They can just say, well, you know, we're just going to hold on, and it'll all be fine. You know, 10, 15, 20 years, you'll never remember this happened. It may destroy your retirement in the meantime, but that's not their problem. And that's the reason we abandon that process.
So bull markets are inevitable, and they're driven by innovation and, frankly, the power of the human spirit. But corrections are also inevitable because human nature causes us to freak out from time to time.
That's true. Bear markets aren't always reasonable. It doesn't, but they don't have to be. You know, if everyone decides this is going to be a bad thing, it can become a bad thing no matter what. And that's the kind of thing you have to be prepared for, because it doesn't have to be market induced. What if it was a COVID-19 outbreak and we turned off the economy worldwide? You know, no one sees that coming. That can't be built into your pie chart. The protection for that can't be there, and it's not. But you can still sidestep that if you're paying attention to what's going on currently.
Well, and that's exactly what happened in all of our portfolios, both the individual client portfolios and all of our 401k models.
Right.
When the leadership in the market started weakening in January of last year, our models became partially defensive in February, and every model was in all cash through the March decline. Now, the same process that took us out of the market and protected capital just reverse put us back in the market after stocks started to rise again. And that's the same process that we've done in prior major corrections. We can go back and look at 2018. The fourth quarter of 2018 was a terrible quarter. Now, it didn't turn into a full-fledged bear market because it only dropped just shy of 20%.
Didn't quite hit the mark, right?
But being in cash during that quarter, protected capital, gives you more money to invest at cheaper stocks. I mean, everybody knows the story, buy low, sell high. But when prices get high and start to collapse, most people won't sell high. They're going to hang on and go through the 20 or 30% drop because they know they made a good buy in the beginning, and after all, markets always go up. And it's just the length of time it takes to get back to even that's a problem. You're so much further ahead if you can exercise discipline. You have a process, and you follow the process to sell high to preserve your capital so that you actually have more money when prices are cheaper. If you want to know how that actually worked for us, I mean, I do a monthly update on our 401k models, all five of them. I mean, and I'll send it to you. You can look at it. And we have last year's returns. We have year-to-date returns. And you can look at that compared to the market. You'll be surprised what a difference it makes when you have the discipline to sell high and buy low so you can sell high.
And that's what's missing out of the pie chart. There's no sell discipline. There's nothing there that says, hey, we should lighten up on this stuff right now. We should move. They don't ever do that. And that's why they end up taking the big hit. And I tell you, it's always exciting if you're doing better than the market. If the S&P is up and you're up more, you feel good about that. Boy, let me tell you, if the S&P is down 34% and you're down 4 or 5, that feels pretty good too. And that's what you miss on that pie chart. You never have that opportunity to say, my portfolio is not dropping like a rock, because they just stay invested. They never get out of the market. It's if you want cash, do it yourself. They're never going to. And that's the safety valve. That's the safety. That's the lifeboat. Cash. You get out and you just stay on the sidelines for a while, wait for the smoke to settle, and then head back in. And it's a repeatable process that we've seen happen over and over again. It's very doable. And it you want to talk about being able to stay invested? That's the way you can stay invested. You don't have to ever look at your portfolio and say, well, I just lost 40% of everything I spent the last 25 years saving. That'll scare you out of the market. And we really try to avoid that. We are up against our break here, Don. We are just a little over, as we always are. So we should go ahead and get out of here. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have our August market update coming up August 7th. You can register for that at IRIRadio.com. If you have questions for us this morning, feel free to give us a call, 888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757. We'll be happy to talk with you. We will be out of here for a brief break. Stay with us. We will be right back.
The Lone Ranger.
Yeah, well, the Fed could use a visit from the Lone Ranger trying to bail them out of their position.
There you go.
So what you were talking about safety and actually being able to defend your portfolio at the tail end of the last segment.
Sure.
And the normal assumption is, well, safety's in bonds. And so the older you get, the more money your advisor puts in bonds. Or if you have a target date fund, the closer you get to the target date, the more money you have in bonds, which means your return's going to be lower. And in today's market, actually means you are increasing your risk the more you put into bonds. Why does that happen? Well, part of that is the historic relationship between stocks and bonds is that when stocks fall, money moves to bonds, causing bond values to rise. And on a portfolio basis, it minimizes the drop. It doesn't eliminate it, but it makes it a little less severe. Therefore, the advisor can say, but you didn't lose as much money as being in the market. Well, that's because you weren't in the market 100%. You are in bonds. In recent bear markets, particularly with the 08-09 collapse, bonds fell with stocks. There was no protection. Gold fell. Every asset that you were turning to for protection was doing the same thing stocks were. The correlations have fallen apart. That was true in 18, and it was true last year. I mean, the correlations that you're most likely using for protection don't make sense in bear markets anymore. They are not working. What is your protection? And that is a process that actually says, this stinks. I'm losing money. It's time to protect capital. Remember Warren Buffett's rule one. Don't lose money. Now, if you have one rule, you're bound to have two. And he does. He has another rule. Rule two is remember rule one. Don't lose money. And yet the standard portfolio that is industry standard and considered best practices is we just lose less money than you would if you were 100% stocks. But don't worry, this too shall pass.
And the scary part about that is that they don't care how much money you're losing. If they're losing a little less than the market, like you said, Don, if the market's down 34% and you're down 30, that's a win. You know, they think they're doing a good job. Meanwhile, you're down 30%, and that's the way it's supposed to work. That's if everything is going well. That's the outcome that's expected. That's the outcome that you're gonna see in your portfolio, but they're never gonna tell you that because they keep talking about 50-year, 80-year averages. And if you happen to lose 30 or 40% this year, well, we're just not gonna worry about that. And that's truly what they do. They don't worry about it. We just don't think that's good enough. We think it's important to protect that capital, that the gains that you have and the money that you've saved is the most important piece of the puzzle of trying to move forward, trying to really build wealth. And the only way sometimes to protect that capital is to not be in any market. Go to cash and hang out for a minute because everything's going down at the same time. That's when you should be out. That's what we try to do.
Liz Ann Saunders is chief investment strategist at Charles Schwab, and she publishes a lot of stuff on Twitter, and we get emails from her on a regular basis. As chief investment officer or strategist, she makes a point, and it's valid, that low inflation environment does foster a negative correlation between stocks and bonds, which means stocks go down, bonds go up in a low inflationary environment. And we've had that for 40 years, which makes bond investing look safe because falling interest rates are good for bonds. But now what is unknown is whether this inflation is temporary, transitory, as the Fed calls it, or if, in fact, as I pointed out in the first segment today, there's some substantial inflation over the last 5 years that nobody wants to talk about. And if this is a secular shift, it has huge implications for market behavior and how you diversify. Well, and again, the market assumes that diversification is the holy grail of risk management, when risk management is not owning things that are losing their shirt, where investors have said, this company makes no sense, we are out of here. And that's trackable. That's all we do. We track where leadership is. We call leadership magnet for money. If investors are dumping money into a particular segment of the market, there's something that is attracting that capital. We don't know why. Frankly, we don't care.
Sure.
All we do know is money flow is strong and it's pushing prices up, and you should own some of that. But what do you do if you've been buying it and all of a sudden the money flow reverses? And it's like somebody rang the fire alarm and all the investors are running for the exit at the same time. And we've seen some of that this week. I mean, it hasn't been a massive call for a bear market by any means, but certainly there has been few buyers for all the sellers. And that means those who want or need to sell are getting lower and lower prices this past week.
And when the markets start to get skitsy like that, if you are a pie chart investor, if your advisor hands you a pie chart and said, here, this is your asset allocation, that's just a random collection of asset classes. They don't care what's going up right now. They don't care what's going down right now. Here's what we're going to buy you because on average, this is we think this should make up your portfolio at a given, you know, volatility level, as if they can change the volatility in the market with the asset allocation in your portfolio, which of course they can't, but that's their sales pitch. That's what they're going to say. This is going to take care of you, but it's more or less random. It's random compared to what's going on in the market today, which is why we don't use the long-term average. We watch what's going on currently, and we add the diversification that makes sense instead of random diversification, whether it makes sense or not. If something's losing money, that's not something I want to diversify into, but that's what happens with that pie chart. You own it going up, you own it going down, and you own it because of the return of the last 80 years, which has no influence on what's going on this year. And we just don't think that's good enough for investors. It's not good enough for our clients anyway. We can do better than that.
Well, and we know that because we used to do what the financial advisor community tells
exactly.
You. It's best practices. That's the term. Well, this is the way smart people diversify and manage risk. Well, how's it do in bear markets? Well, let's not talk about that.
Moving on. Nothing to see here. Yeah, it's like,
the market always goes up over time. It's true. Mm-hmm. It's just that when you need your money and the market's dropping, what's the plan? And there isn't one. It's hold on. It's buy and hold. And we have been well trained in that. We're both certified financial planners. We're both accredited investment fiduciaries. We understand the standards. But we also understand that protecting capital in down markets is more important than it is to beat any index on the upside.
Indeed.
If you lose your capital, you don't have anything to gain on the upside. You have to get even. And while the market drops more often in terms of length of time, more often than it does go up, it's the recovery period that costs you money. You hang on through the drop, even if you manage to drop less than the market, which is considered a win. How long does it take you just to get even? Which means you are continually exposed to risk and not getting paid for it until you get above the last high. And if you need money in the meantime, it's really hard for you to get back to even. It takes an exceptional market.
Further. Yep, it does. And you spend so much time just backfilling from the past loss that you don't have much time. And so you look at people say, well, look, the last 18 months, you know, markets are up like crazy. It's like, well, how much did you lose before that? Because that's what you have to make up first before any of those gains count. And that's what really puts you behind.
So one of the ways to figure out how that works is to attend our webinars. We do them every month. They're live right after the show, first Saturday of the month, unless it's a holiday weekend. So the next one's August 7th, You register at irradio.com. And if you go to irradio.com, click on the video tab. And I'd suggest you scroll down to January. Look at January, and we explain how we managed the risk last year to avoid losing money when the S&P's down 34%. That's an educational video. Go to irradio.com, video tab, scroll down to January, and watch that video. You will not be sorry. You will learn a lot. You want to talk to us during the week, we have a phone number, it's 800-317-9119, 800-317-9119. You can send us an email, help@irradio.com. Lord willing, we'll be back next week. Have a great weekend. Stay safe out there.